pledge of allegiance in our invitation, I just want to say that...
Recording in progress.
That our country is in a very precarious position right now. And if you are so inclined, pray to your God for our country. Because I don't ever remember in my lifetime our country being in such a situation as it is, so politically divided. There is so much hatred and division going on in high places. And I think our founding fathers would be very concerned right now, looking down on where we are today. There's been a moral decline in this country that's been going on for at least 50 years. And now some of those things are attempting to be reversed, and there's very much consternation. There's an awful lot of hatred and dissension among people in high places, as well as across the board. I don't want to see this country follow the same path that most have. We've made it 245 years right now, roughly. And this has been the most successful experiment in governance in the history of the world. And it's been proposed many times in the past. America would never be defeated by an enemy, but only from within. And today, I feel like our country's in tatters right now. I'm very concerned about some of the threats of violence going on. And so, if you're inclined to do so, pray to God for some guidance for people in high places, and that each of us might try to promote peace, understanding, and maintain separation, but only on the basis of intellectual things and not violence. Nothing's ever really accomplished by violence. That's the last resort. I don't want to see a civil war in this country. It doesn't have to happen. But some people are going to have to step up to the plate. Anybody in any kind of power position, even if you're just the auditor or the treasurer or councilman or commissioner, and I'll start right here. Let's promote harmony and the values that have made this country great in the past. If you would, let's repeat the Pledge of Allegiance and then the invocation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Would you join me? Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for this country that we've been given. We thank you for the freedoms we've enjoyed that have been unique amongst probably all the nations in the world. We thank you for the vision and the foresight that those that have come before us gave us. And we know that we enjoy freedom here and prosperity that most of the world has never known. And I believe it's because your hand's been upon us and blessed us for what we've tried to do. We pray for our country. We pray for all those in positions of power, aside from politics. We pray that you'd be with those who are in places to affect these changes that might need to be made and to preserve the harmony of the people of this country that we might move forward in a positive way. Give us wisdom in this hour. We thank you for this opportunity to serve you and to serve the citizens of Brown County. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay. We have some changes to the agenda. Do we?
I think we just have an addition. That is,
okay.
We have two. The Debbie Vardis and resignation of the Fire Protection Board.
Put that under other?
Yeah.
Other business? Okay. Right before they
I don't see Debbie. Is anybody here from the Convention and Visitors Bureau? I'm not sure that she changed the time, Melissa.
She may not.
So I don't know if I have her number or not. If not, we can put her on the September 7th agenda.
Okay.
They're just requesting permission to put another like leaf cam in town, and they would like to use a county property to mount that.
Okay. Well, if she does arrive, we'll put her between other business and legal.
Yeah. And I talked to Laura. Laura was going to get with her about access to the internet.
Okay. Minutes and claims, you both had a chance to review those?
I have, yes.
Yes.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve minutes and claims.
Second.
Motion to second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, raise your right hand and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Sheriff's Department.
So this is the first reading of their ordinance in order to raise the fee for their sheriff's sale, and that is because the company that does our sheriff's sale has raised that fee. I don't think that, we've got the thing where it's been posted. So they have not raised that fee in quite some time. But it's SRI, and I believe that their fee now is $180. The sheriff's cost is $100, so the cost of administering a sheriff's sale is $280.50 now. So, and this is all according to state code. So we don't have to read the whole thing. We just have to address it by title.
Yes.
You'll entertain a motion.
Yes, please.
I'll make a motion to pass on first reading an ordinance to establish the sheriff's sale program and service fee. And Julia, I'll need an ordinance number.
And I'll second that.
Okay.
Jerry, I guess we'll have to make a call.
Okay. Any discussion? Questions?
Do you have it?
Just some other quick updates on paving. Last week they finished putting the painted lines on the 4 mile, so they do have a spot that I'm going to have them come back and do some repair work. There's some gravel that washed on the edge of the road. They got mixed in with the paint, so I'll have them come back, clean that up, and then that job will be finished. They've got Claylick shoulders finished and painted. We're currently working on Helmsburg Road. It's all wedged. They wedged from town to Helmsburg, and then now they're turning around and coming back, laying the final surface. So they've probably got a couple more days on that to get the pavement down, and then they'll start on the shoulder work on it. on our local paving, I've been working with E&B on getting the schedule put together, but it looks like they're going to have an opening become available to where they could be starting paving next week. So we haven't confirmed that yet, but so we're working on that. So that's moving forward on our local paving. On another project that's actually an NDOT project that will affect us all in a couple of years, I was part of a, it was actually an online preliminary field check, but State Route 46, if you saw in the paper, they were going to be doing soil borings between here and Bloomington. That's for a what they're classifying as a major resurfacing plus other improvements. So they're looking at replacing at least 20 culverts and then doing bridge and deck overlays, as well as repaving the whole road with shoulders, putting in some extra passing blisters. One that's been needed for many, many, many years is at Upper Schooner. So it's finally going to get a passing blister for the left-hand turn, so people don't get rear-ended at the bottom of the hill, hopefully, and that'll make that better. So they're looking at that being a, hopefully being a late 2023 letting to where they could work on the structures through the winter and then pave it in 2024.
Great.
So that'll be a major reconstruction project for the state, for us, between here, all the way between here and Bloomington. So it won't be near like 46 East, so it won't have big wide shoulders, but it'll still be resurfaced. And
I read that. It sounded like it would come from Bloomington to here and on out to where 135 moves south.
No, they're talking about stopping at the bridge.
Okay.
So the bridge will get a deck overlay, and then it'll stop just this side of the bridge.
Okay.
There by CVS.
Yeah, maybe I misread it, but it sounded like it was going all the way. You know, that's...
They
take care of this road out.
Yeah, they said 135, but I think they meant the intersection in town.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But anyway, so that project's in the works.
That'll help.
Yes, that'll be a nice project. They were doing... So just some other things. We had a couple issues. Our newest road grader, you know, there was a $250,000 piece of equipment was down this week for a computer controller issue. So thank you to all the modern technology. It shut the machine down a week and a half ago, and we've been waiting on parts, so hopefully they'll have it back together today. So that kind of put us behind. And then we had a hydraulic leak that hit the exhaust manifold and started a fire under the hood of one of our mowing tractors the other morning while he was going down the highway, so that was exciting.
Which I want to say thank you. Cricket Creek was lovely.
Well, he was headed back to finish out in that area. He was going to Yellowwood, and then it caught on fire right there about Cricket Creek. And so we're still assessing that on the damages and trying to get it fixed and back on the road. But the other mower's still running fine and working it and trying to keep up on the other things. So. The other thing I had, which was, Diana's not back yet, but as part of the, I had laid a copy on you guys' desk, which is a draft of what I'm going to be submitting on the latest round, the 2022-2 submittal for the $1 million road grant. So we're eligible to submit this fall. So that's due by the end of the month, but I want to get it in a little bit early. So one of the things I do need your approval on is one of the things that goes along with it is our financial commitment letter, which Jerry, if you remember, you signed one last year, which just says that we, within the county highway department, that I have the funds available to pay the match money. But it has to be a signed commitment letter that goes with it. So the only thing that looks a little funny on the application is the way the state's mapping works. If you look at the maps on there, what's listed as Greasy Creek Road is because if you go back to the 1936 map, when they first assigned road inventory numbers, they numbered a road from Nashville all the way to the Johnson County line, which was Greasy Creek, Bear Wallow Hill, up through Little Shag, Gatesville, and up Bean Blossom Road, all the way to the county line. Well, when their computer picks it up, even though we're only doing the piece of Bean Blossom from Gatesville Road North up to the Spearsville intersection, it still tagged that name as Greasy Creek. So in the explanation, even though it says Greasy Creek in the paragraph explaining it, I put on there like I had to do on one of the other roads last year, that's actually our Bean Blossom Road. So based on increased dollar amounts, there's only going to be three roads in the application. It'll be North Shore, South Shore, and 4.6 miles of Bean Blossom Road. So I had to take off Beach Street, which was our fourth option. So that we can put that back into the local paving for next year. But like we discussed with the local paving, with the increases in cost, what we're seeing is we're not going to be able to do as many miles each time as what we did before, because we were hoping to do those four routes would have been about 10 and a half miles, so we're only going to be able to do about 8.5 to 9 miles for the same amount of money. So with your approval then, I'll have Jerry sign the financial commitment letter that says that I will have the money within the budget to pay the match money, which is 25%. And then that will be an attachment to the application. So all that has to be uploaded on the NDOT website, so I will get that all uploaded. Hopefully, I'm going to try to have it all done by the end of the week, and that will get it in early before the end of the month. And so we've got plenty of time to form to do a preliminary review.
So, Mike, I came in on the tail of
yes.
that. So the Greasy Creek Road designation is really
Bee Blossom. It's really Bee Blossom.
Okay.
If you look at the bottom paragraph under
because
the...
Because they've got it mislabeled
on the map.
They've got a couple that are...
Yeah, so if you look at page 6 in the comments, it explains that it's actually our Bee Blossom Road.
Okay.
But on the header, it'll show up as Greasy Creek just because of the way it was initially ID'd in 1936 on the inventory map.
Need to take a vote on this?
Yeah, you can't. It doesn't either way.
It's not required.
Yeah, it's not required. It is. But if you want to just maybe for the minutes recognize that you
make a motion to submit the application.
That we're submitting the application by the end of the month.
Okay. All right, I'll do that.
Motion.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, raise your right hand and say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. I feel better about signing it now.
And then go back to the sheriff.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get back. We need Diane to close in a motion of a second before you left on the
sheriff.
All the
sheriff's.
Sheriff's.
Okay. All in favor, raise your right hand and say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
My doctor's office. Also.
Okay. You need us back, Mike?
Yes, please.
Okay. Pretty good.
I don't have to. No, I have to scan that in the board.
Well, it's pretty exciting to see that we're being able to do what we can for the paving this year. This
yes.
is probably about as much as we've ever done in 1 year, so.
Other than 2015, when we first started, yeah. we did close to 40 miles that year with reclaiming and paving. But we basically saved up 2 years worth of money to do that in 1 year.
They didn't do anything in 2014. They didn't.
Or hardly in 13 either, so.
Get something over 30 miles new pavement this year.
Yeah. So, and it's good. And the contractors they're hard at it. They're working every day. It's not raining. And actually worked in the drizzle a little bit the other morning. I kind of unexpected drizzle early the other morning. So, by the time they got prepped and got tacked down, it quit raining. The fog lifted, so they were good to go.
We have about 240 miles, 240 miles of paved road in the county. We'll get done with this season paving this fall. We will have done all of it, but about 79 miles.
Yeah, so we'll be two-thirds finished.
Yeah. So hopefully by the end of the 10 years of 2025, we will have done all of them to get ready to start over again.
Yeah, our initial plan when we started in the fall of 14 into 15 with the planning was our hopes was to be able to hit them all within 20 years, so we're well ahead of that schedule.
Yeah.
Well, and when I told you that my goal was 20 miles a year, Mike looked at me.
We laughed at her.
They laughed at me. They're like, there's no way. And I'm like, where there's a will, there's a way. And
yeah. A lot of things have fallen into place to help us with that.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've restructured the budget many times to make that happen.
And so, thank you for the Community Crossings Program. It's helped us a lot.
This application that we're submitting will be our fifth million that we're petitioning for, which is our money, so we have to go through a process to get it back. But that's all part of the system. So,
exactly.
So we'd be nice to them and play the game as long as we keep getting the $1 million checks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, next on the agenda is the Purdue Extension Town National Brown County Government Bike Pedestrian Trail RFQ update.
So we have emailed out the RFQs to multiple, I think six different engineering firms. And so I just wanted to let everyone know that they've been asked to be returned by August 31st. So that's a kind of update on that one. So we will have that.
And I presume a committee will score those.
And Mike Mogo's going to overview them, take an overview of them for us. And then,
I mean, there's no numbers associated. This is just their qualifications to do the project.
Correct.
So there's a rubric for scoring. And I imagine one of us will have to be on that.
Yeah.
Scoring committee.
So it's August the 31st, and we have the first meeting in September. The 7th.
Okay. So we will see what replies and what they have to offer and what their qualifications are. It's the first step. And then we proceed to, I guess, get our engineering report and eventually come up with a cost estimate.
Yeah, once you select the engineering company to do the project, then you'll sit down with that company and give them the scope of work that you want included, and then they'll come back to you with a cost of what that project would cost.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is for a master plan, so yeah, we're going to plan a planning study. Yeah.
So if the cost is too high, then you can redefine the scope of the work, eliminate, you know, some areas. I think our original request is that we ask them for, of course, it's a $20,000 grant, but we ask them to just focus on Washington Township, not the whole county. So that will, you know, reduce the cost quite a bit.
Okay, very good. Anything further on that?
No, I mean, it's just important for us to have the master plan for the pedestrian bike trails, because without it, we cannot apply for next level trails grants, which will be, are available now, but which will be available the first of the year. And in order to get those, you know, the town really wants us to focus now on extending the trail out to Deer Run.
I talked to Mike earlier today, and I think they're about ready to start on Salt Creek Trail section between the bridges.
Yeah, they're negotiating the sports calendar, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So. And that's not a really big project by some standards, but what do you think they could do it in a month or two?
Not should be very long.
Yeah, he said with good weather, it's a matter of weeks, and they'd have it ready to pave, so two to three weeks.
The only spot that gets really narrow is if there's an oxbow wetlands, which is where the creek used to be, but then the creek has moved, so it's kind of a crescent in there behind. It's in that far corner where the creek curves to go over.
Behind where the soccer field is.
Behind where the soccer field is.
Yeah.
So it just stays shady and damp.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next on the agenda is planning and zoning.
So I questioned at our last meeting the legality of allowing Kara Hammes to continue on the Area Planning Commission, even if she had moved on from that position. It's not likely that position is going to be filled very quickly. So we asked Dave Schilling for his opinion, because he is the Planning Commission attorney for multiple counties and towns.
Yeah.
He does Ellettsville, I think he does
Monroe County.
He does Monroe County, he does, yeah. So anyway, he sent us a letter that said the actions taken by CARA prior to the appointment of a new extension educator would be valid under the de facto officer doctrine recently described in a court case which went to Indiana Court of Appeals in 2021. It was CHOPO versus the Jefferson City, Jefferson County Planning Commission. So she can in fact hold that position until a new extension educator is appointed. And they're just churning through the extension office every couple of months with new people. And I'd really like to sit down with Purdue because we pay them part of, and this is a completely different topic, but we pay them like 2/3 or something of the salary as a contract to provide us with two educators. And we don't have them. So, you know, I'm not really sure how that works. So we'll have to look into that. But in light of Mr. Schilling's legal opinion, which is in writing and which, Kaylee, you should file in your office so that if it does come up, then you can refer back to this. But in light of that, I will make a motion to appoint, to continue Kara Hammes's appointment to the Area Planning Commission until a new extension educator is hired.
Okay. Motion. Second. Any discussion? Question about what we're doing here? The advice of the Planning Commission attorney, I think we're in pretty good shape. So, all in favor, raise your right hand, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. Thank you, Caleb.
We did have, we still do need to advertise for the county commissioner's appointment to the Area Planning Commission.
And that was who?
Debbie Vardis. Resigned in April.
Okay. So, Melissa, you want to advertise for that position?
Yeah. That'll be through January appointment. Yeah, it'll be through January
2026.
Okay. So it's just for the remainder of.
Yeah, she just got appointed.
Yeah.
So, okay. If the plan commission or the plan director has any recommendations, we would have to accept them. So go out and look for your own board member. Well, it's difficult just throwing a random person into the mix because they have to work together. They have to, you know, so.
But then people who are interested will send their letter of interest to you all, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Unless you want, do you want them to us? And then we.
They could go to Kayla.
I think they need to go to you. You all because it's your appointment.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then as you get them, Melissa, just forward them to Kayla.
Share them with her and we'll all. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's not like you don't have to make your
board. Not like she can't hear them through the wall.
Okay, thank you, Kayla.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to other business. The Indian Hill proposal. The agenda next.
Mike, are you on there?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'll go ahead and give an update on this. The railroad has agreed to allow us to open a pedestrian and bicycle crossing on this railroad. Where we are at right now, they send us a cost estimate based on, you know, the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration's requirements, basically so they'll be required by law for this crossing. So they gave us an estimate of that cost, and we would like to discuss that, I believe, at this meeting to determine, you know, how we'd like to pay for this and what our next move would be.
Okay.
Mike, do you want to discuss the actual projected cost?
Yeah, I can mention the numbers they have here. So the total would be $155,575. The signal apparatus would be about $145,000 of that. With the majority of the cost, or about half the cost, going towards the field installation. using the railroad's team to do it. Other than that, I don't know, does everyone, is it available, this cost estimate to everybody, or should I go line item by line item to the numbers?
The copies are out here for everyone.
And the copies are on the table for the audience.
So for the audience.
Okay, well, I'll leave it at that, unless there's any questions.
I have contacted the insurance company on the insurance question, and we have not received a response back as of yet.
The crossing itself is just an inventory issue, so it's no different than Helmsburg Road Railroad Crossing. So, I mean, there's no special insurability required other than the railroad wants to know that we actually have liability insurance.
That's what I asked her for, certificate of coverage.
Certificate of coverage, and then I can contact Scott Lee, she was vice president with Lisbon Knight, and ask him for a letter stating that, that it's covered under our existing policy.
We have multiple railroad crossings in the county.
Yeah, that are.
And they're all basically.
What other, besides Helmsburg Road, on County Road, Mike? At the end of Bear Creek, Pool Road.
There's a bridge at Hornetown.
There's a bridge, they put in the bridge at Hornetown.
Crossing at Fruit Table. Crossing at Vernal.
Vernal.
It comes out on down. There's a crossing at, off the Railroad Road at, it's crossing.
Oh, Patriot Lane.
Yeah, across from Stinson.
Mm-hmm.
One there. Then you have the crossing actually on Helmsburg Road, crossing at Bear Creek, basically Bear Creek North Shore.
And then there's one at County Line.
Yes.
By Pullings, which one side is us and the other side is Monroe County.
So there's seven or eight in the county.
So yeah, it's no different than any of those. There's no increased risk beyond what those represent. So that won't be hard to get a letter from him.
Okay.
So I had spoken to, some time ago, I spoke with the track maintenance supervisor, I guess is his title, Bernie Geritas. This crossing, if you're familiar in Bloomington, with the crossings that are on like the bypass and Pete Ellis Drive and out of Karst Farms. This crossing would be a concrete turnstile where they've got to walk and look up and down the track. It'll have an arm on it to keep people from going across it. The railroad will have to start signaling there. Again, we don't signal there anymore. But you're looking at a fully engineered, that's what has to be done by federal standards in order to have an actual crossing there. So now,
when it was vehicular, it had flashing lights?
No.
There will be flashing lights.
Yeah, there will be in this new proposal. In this new one, there was none before.
Yeah.
I don't think there is.
I am told from the railroad that the, I guess I don't know what it's called, the arm or whatever, some of the material, the kind of the guard warning, is something they had in inventory. So we will get a discount from that, at least.
Yeah, what he was trying to convince me earlier was that they would have to close one of the ones in Bloomington in order to have the equipment to install it here. But, my question is, for $155,000, which county road are we not going to pave next year?
Yeah.
So, that kind of is honestly what it comes down to. Who did I talk to this morning before my coffee? Is it Darren? There you are. I see you hiding back there. Yeah. You call me at 7:30 again, you make sure I've had coffee. Okay. I did speak with him this morning, and, you know, I think at a $155,000 price tag, the county is not going to take all that responsibility. So I think that we might be able to get some funding from DNR, because they have an interest in getting it open. And if the Hikers Council wishes to fundraise and, you know, get some more of that, the question for us, I think, is, you know, what cost are we willing, you know, what are we willing to put into the pot so that, you know, they're going to raise, for them to raise the rest of the funds. Because it's not going to be, it can't be a vehicle crossing, because that slab is really no longer viable.
Yeah, we just barricaded it.
We barricaded the slab, yeah, because it was already cracked and in like 3 or 4 pieces. And with all the rain that we have gotten, this year has been particularly wet. So, anyway, those are my thoughts on the subject.
Okay.
If anybody else wishes to share.
Yes, anyone from the audience here today would like to speak to this issue.
Mr. Abbott.
Thank you. Yourself welcome to come to the microphone there. Introduce yourself.
Tony Abbott's my name. I appreciate the opportunity to speak again.
Can you make sure that microphone is on, please?
Is it a little too far away?
It could be. Does it sound like it's turned
better
on?
Oh, it has no light. I'll be right back.
Probably needs a battery charge.
Go on.
Mr. Pfluger, how are you?
Okay, yourself?
Did Laura get the smart board, I guess, working here? Yes.
Can we, is that better? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity to be back to speak to this. Ms. Stinson sent us a copy of the railroad's estimate on Monday. So we've been talking among ourselves about what's the significance of that to our proposed amendment. Didn't really know. Hope to learn a little bit more today from the railroad's presentation. Having heard Mr. Moga, it sounds like the cost provided by the railroad is being viewed as it's carved in stone, a requirement. And we'd like to present some information that might bring that into question, and that it might be considerably less than $155,000. I was going to start this presentation with like a 4-minute video walking up to this particular crossing, because that's why we're here, for those who haven't been there, both from the north and the south, because it gives you a feel for the entire environment of where this is at. And if you think about the feng shui of the wilderness, you don't put the Taj Mahal of crossings in a small rural setting. This is a beautiful setting. I'd like to show it to you if you've got about 4 minutes.
Door to head.
Charles, can you bring up?
This is from State Road 45. Turn off the sound, Charles. And if you can make that a screen. Okay, we're walking south here on Indian Hill Road, and it's fairly narrow. It's mostly old gravel. If you could, Charles, pull your cursor forward a little bit at the bottom of the screen. If you look up ahead there, keep coming, you will see right here, stop there please, you will see the railroad sign. It's still there. Yellow railroad sign with the crossbucks and the RR. That's not crossbucks, but the X. And then there's a little bridge over Green Blossom Creek, and to the right of that, kind of behind the tree, is the crossing itself. So if you can go on up to the crossing, Charles. Charles, by the way, is the president of the Knobson Hiking Trail Association. He wasn't able to be here last time.
Is just a question. Is Suzanne Mittenthal still around?
She is still part of it. She is no longer as forefront in the management as she was, but she's still part.
She and I went hiking one time.
Yeah, she's quite a character.
She is. Yeah. When we met and we talked, and I found out who she was, you know, then we just had a grand time.
Absolutely. Once you meet her, you don't forget her.
No.
If we could come right up to the metal barricade with the stop sign on it. I just kind of want you to see what the surface is now, since it's been closed to vehicular traffic. And in a way, that's a point that the other crossings that you've named may not have in common, because the vehicular traffic, there's no vehicular traffic here anymore. It's gone. But here is the track, and if you stop here, Charles, you can see what the surface is. And surface is important here when we're talking about crossings and trails. And on the other side of the track is a matching metal barricade that blocks it from the south. And if we went on with this particular video, we'd look up the tracks, we'd look down the tracks, you can see for a long way both ways. Now, if we could change videos here, Charles, and come in from the south. Coming in from the south is particularly attractive, I think. You're walking up to the crossing, and it's not very wide. It's really more of a track than a road. And you're coming here to an area where you can ford the creek, which is kind of fun for hikers and backpackers and trail runners, because it adds a little variety, and it's fun. So you cross over here, and as soon as we get across, if you can pull that forward just a little bit, Charles. It's very picturesque, and it's very rural. It's kind of rough there, but the water's run off, and now we can see, it's not very long, the whole road, but now we're approaching the tracks. You can see the stop sign and the metal barrier. We go up to the barrier one more time.
The person who took that video was awful.
Was that you?
Yeah. I was experimenting with a new gyro stabilizer, trying to figure out how to make it work.
You cast a large shadow, Charles.
Yeah, I do. Good thing the audio isn't on. You hear me gasping for my breath.
Anyway, there's plenty of gravel mounded up on each side of these barricades. So I guess that's part of the deterrent for people using it. But what you've really got is the two barricades and the stop signs. Now I have a picture, Charles, if you can stop the video here. Looks like you were there on a nice day. What was this, December?
November,
okay. If you can stop this and go to the lineup of other documents. Somewhere there you'll see a 2019 aerial photo. I think it's photo 6. Yeah, can you make that bigger? Maybe not. This is I think this is a section of Google Maps looking down from the air on this crossing in 2019 before the May 2020 closure. And you can see, and I struggle very much to see what was there. There's almost no signage that I can see from any direction except the yellow one. And there may be a crossbucks type of sign.
There was.
Was there?
Yes.
Was it lighted or was it? Yeah, it was just a crossbucks sign.
It was just a crossing sign.
Okay. And for those who don't know what a crossbucks sign is, it's that, the X, the railroad and crossing. And that is a standard passive traffic control device. And when I use the word passive, that is a term of art. you could get out of this, Charles, and go back to your lineup of documents, you will see an IMUTDC, or CD. See that? Can you pass those out? We're going to pass out to you a diagram from the Indiana Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices. And it's quite long, but this is one page of it. This is, the top of that is a figure, an example of signing and markings for a pathway grade crossing. And pathway is a term of art. There are some definitions on the next page that are in yellow highlighted. Passive grade crossing simply means there are no automatic signals, there is no electricity controlling devices such as arms going up and down, lights flashing, bells sounding. So passive is that. And if you look here, this section 8D.05, passive devices for pathway grade crossings, and pathway is a term of art too. A pathway is for people to walk on or ride bicycles on, separate from the travel roadway, typically. And this entire art, part 8, applies to crossings of those pathways. Basically, it's pedestrians and bicyclers across railroad tracks. And this section talks about passive devices for pathway crossings. And basically, it requires a crossbox, what we looked at earlier. And the design of the crossbox is set out in this diagram. It's got a post with the X sign with the railroad crossing. Below that on the same post, or it can be a separate post, is a yield sign or a stop sign. The yield sign in Indiana is, I understand, the default. And then ahead of that, before you get to the crossing, is that yellow RR sign that we saw on the roadway earlier. So you got that thing here. We got a crossing coming up, and then you get to the crossing. On each side of it, you've got the crossbox and the yield sign. And that is a standard passive pathway crossing. Two keywords, passive, no electricity, and pathway, no cars, no trucks, just walkers and bicyclers. So this is kind of, I think, what was there originally, this sort of thing, not bells and whistles, not $155,000 worth of instrumentality. What we are asking in our amendment is to turn back the clock to what was there in May of 2020 when that crossing was closed to foot traffic. Okay? And if we simply put it back, the hikers, the backpackers, the trail runners, they don't need any special surface to walk on. Bicycles might require something, but even if they do, I'm going to show you in a minute, there's all kinds of surfaces. I'm going to show you an article. Let's bring it up now. Can you go back to your list of documents? You see American Trails, Charles?
What, the photo?
American Trails, pull that up. Nope, that's Appalachian Trail. But what I got here, there are 17 trail crossings on the Appalachian Trail. Of course, the Appalachian Trail is the largest.
I like some of it.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
Quite good of it.
Goes through lots of different states. But there are 17 rail crossings, and this is one, and you can't really tell it from where you're at, but the trail comes out of the woods on the other side of the tracks, walks over those tracks, and continues towards us. There is not a single sign anywhere near that track. And it, frankly, there are no guidelines, there are no standards for just trails. I mean, we have pathways. Pathways are a little different, but they're the closest thing that I could find under the Indiana Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices closest thing to a trail. But if we can go to the American Trails. This is an article in 2019, Trails Crossing an Active Railroad Line, and that's what we have here. We have two trains crossing here a day. And the author is the editor of American Trails Magazine and the former trails coordinator for the state of Colorado. I want to the only point of this is to show you that the commissioners have options. You don't have to go with the expensive version. They're going to show you here several different trails. There's your yellow sign with the two R's on each side of the track. We just keep coming. This is the same crossing. It's got the little cross bucks there. But these are both passive because they're just signs. There's no electricity. There's no automatic signals. And if you I know you can't read the caption below some of these pictures, but one of them, take my word for it, says that the key features of any crossing is two. One is signs, and the other is surface. So it needs to be appropriate for the use. It needs to be appropriate for the line of sight and those sorts of things. And if you keep coming down here, you'll see that there's all kinds of different signs used and different surfaces. These are mostly in-town type of pathways. If you keep coming, Charles. The key here is that it should be at a 90-degree angle, otherwise bicycles get their front tires caught in the grooves between the tracks. Nobody likes that. Keep coming down. All the way towards the end. There's one in here from Indianapolis at the White River Parkway. There's a bicycle crossing. Again, these are static signs. There's asphalt over some of these crossings. Come on down towards the end, Charles. This is one. See how this has got a lead up, it's kind of at an angle, not too much different than the angle of the crossing that we're talking about. Keep coming. Keep coming. And there is an asphalt crossing, and this last picture here, you can see the bridge over the water. You can see the angle. The incline, and you can see the asphalt. The asphalt is from the road surface up to the tracks, in the middle of the tracks, and down the other side. Keep coming, Charles. More asphalt crossing. You know, I know Mr. Magnard has a better idea of what the cost of asphalt is than I do, but if you've got these plastic signs and you've got an asphalt surface, that should be all that is needed, even for bicycles. But keep in mind that our amendment is for foot traffic only. It's not for bicycles. In fact, the Tecumseh Trail, north of there and south of there, is not for horses and it's not for bicycles. It's for people on foot. And the reason that's relevant is because it's going to cost more to put a special surface down for bicycles for something nobody's asked for. If you will look at your handout, you got the second handout?
Or the oh, there? It's with that.
Okay. Pages maybe 3 and 4 of the handout. We were curious about the price list or the estimate from the railroad company. So Mr. Pfluger went to the Hall Signs in Bloomington.
Hall Signs in Bloomington, yeah.
Which I understand that Indiana Department of Transportation gets a lot of its signs from. And wanted to find out what is the cost of the passive signs shown on the first page of the handout. And if you look at the quote of the estimate from Hall Signs, you will see that a typical crossbox, which is identified on the list as R or 15R-1, is $125. Two of them is $250. They include the post, they include the hardware, and they include the yield sign, and altogether it's less than $1,200 for all the signage that would be required in Indiana for this location. And if you don't need a special service, then you're done. If you do need a special service, we order some asphalt or gravel. There's examples of the American Trails thing that I showed you of gravel between the tracks. So crushed stone, it also works. There are different services. But the point is, if you put something in this environment that doesn't fit there, it's going to stand out. It's just, it's out of place. You need something simple like what was there before. Not only has the benefit of fitting in, but also has the benefit of not costing an arm and a leg. Okay? So, we haven't had much time to prepare for this presentation, but we wanted to put before you the fact that you do have options. You don't have to buy into $155,000 in Indiana. And that may be a purposely inflated, I don't know, price to discourage this board from allowing any amendment. But to be clear, our amendment is to allow foot traffic across that crossing. Any questions about that? Or anything I said?
Sir, I personally completely agree with you. I'm not a real smart guy, but I think I have pretty good common sense. I grew up on a farm. I'm a farmer in Devonshire, in England. But, you know, if you're on foot and you're approaching a set of railroad tracks, if you don't hear a train coming, you must be completely deaf.
Jerry, it's not that. It's the railroad has actually had an issue with people on the tracks who are wearing ear pods. Well, and
can I also be a Debbie Downer here?
Sure.
The railroad owns the property. And if you're going to do it, you're going to do it fair way.
Yeah.
Not really. Keep in mind.
The railroad has the cookie. Yep. That's right.
Let me speak to that if I may. Because this has been brought up maybe 3 or 4 times. The legislature vested the authority to close railroad crossings in the local governmental units. It's per statute. If this railroad could have closed this crossing on its own authority, don't you think they would have done that a long time ago? They would have. But the point is, they have to petition this governmental unit, and then when this unit has to follow the statute, get input from the public, find out if there's a compelling reason to keep it open or not, and then make a decision. The thing about railroads being entrusted with that responsibility is that that's not their role. I mean, their role is to protect their own self-interests and their profits and those sorts of things, just like every other private industry. I'm not picking on railroads, but everybody's like that. But the elected officials, their job is to look out for the interests of the people who live in the area. And it doesn't matter who owns that land. He says if they want to petition to close the crossing, they have to ask the local governmental officials. They can't do it themselves. So either the road is either a public road or it isn't. And it still is.
And so it doesn't matter who has Title II property.
Not for purposes of closing a crossing.
So we could have denied their request, at which point they had the option to go to NDOT with the request to override us. Mm-hmm. And then we would not have gotten the $3,000, $3,500 to make the changes on that were our expenses for the closure. But they do have an appeal recourse, and they would have done that.
Yes, they have their appeal recourse.
My question, Mike, is there the Uniform Traffic Standard, this is from November of 2011. Is that still current?
It is.
Well, there's actually two. There's an Indiana adoption, and there's actually the
federal
document, which is the DTCD.
And it's the same for this purpose.
I'd like to have an opportunity to look at the whole chapter and not this one or two pages and review those standards.
And I would say that because Indiana, and this is just an assumption on my part, I would say that because they're choosing to have us go, you know, the bells and whistles route, that in order to maintain their track speed at that location, it would have to be a signaled crossing. If it was an unmarked crossing, then I think they would have to go to slow orders, which they used to have. There were slow orders from the Travelac crossing through the Helms, through the Helmsburg area. That used to be on slow orders. And I think that that is probably going to be a factor in what the railroad wants us to put there.
There are some line of sight standards depending on how fast that train is going, how long we'll be able to see. We've measured this from that crossing both directions, and it's over 3,000 feet each way, which is like 10 times the amount required by the regulations. So I think our point is that for 20 plus years, we were able to walk over that crossing as it was. And it doesn't make any common sense to me that now that vehicles aren't allowed to use it anymore, suddenly we need a $155,000 crossing where we didn't before. That just, it doesn't make sense.
But when the trail was built, the hikers, Hoosier Hikers Council did not ask the railroad for an easement to cross that, so it's kind of like, you know, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to get permission. So, now they want to give you permission.
I don't know what they want to give us. Nobody has reached out to me or the Knobson Hiking Trail Association since I was here last. We haven't heard a word.
I have, if you don't mind, Jerry, I can call Peter Ray and Mr. McDonald, the training master, and I've got Bernie Garitas's number. Just for full disclosure, Mr. Abbott, my brother is the train master for Indiana Railroad, which is why I know so much about railroads.
All right.
But that, you know, that doesn't influence me one way or the other with regard to, you know, my decision on the Board of Commissioners, but it does give me a little bit more insight into their point of view. But I can reach out to them and see, you know, and I think Mike stated in the response that he got back from them, this is not to Indiana road standards, this is to federal railroad standards, which are quite different.
I beg to differ on that point. I think these standards for pathways at passive crossings are identical. I've checked them both.
So, if that's the case, then I would continue with my assumption that it's probably going to cause them to change the speed of the train on that section the way that it was before.
Yeah, if you would, Jerry, I'd like to, like I said before, I'd like to have a chance to look at that whole chapter in both the federal and the India. Plus, I want to go look at the slab because there may be issues there. Since that's under, basically that's part of our inventory at the highway. And since we took traffic off of it, we have not, we just barricaded and have done no maintenance. So right. If there's been any flood damage, we may have some safety issues there that would need to be addressed also.
Yeah, because basically if we open it up to just pedestrian-only traffic, then that becomes a water crossing, essentially. And at times it is a very swift water crossing because it floods. When it floods, it backs up and floods Judy Swift's entire horse field.
It's deep and swift. While that's not optimal, it's not an unusual condition for those who hike in the wilderness.
Yeah.
When we talk about the slab, are we talking about the stream crossing where you walk across the concrete?
Or? Yes.
Yeah, that's the slab.
That's different than the crossing we're here to. Okay, well, you know,
if you give permission to go across the railroad, then they have to go across our slab on the old county road to
right.
Get back to the trail, so it becomes a liability for us again.
Okay. Well, hopefully you're insured against that, huh? But this is not our first effort to try to resolve this in the amendment. We I think Commissioner Biddle, Mr. Magner attended a meeting in November of last year where the railroad was invited to address this and didn't.
With Senator Cook?
And Senator Cook, he set it up. Mm-hmm. Right, it went nowhere.
The railroad did not appear.
They did not appear. Letters have been sent to the railroad. We've got copies we put in our original presentation to this board from the Knoxville Hike and Trail Association and from Representative Matt Pierce and others, and they did not respond at all. No phone call, no response. This is our first opportunity to actually get attention from the railroad, for which we feel like that's some progress. But we'd like to see something done. And I think the only issue for the county is whether there's a compelling reason to keep the crossing open. If so, then the amendment should be signed and adopted. And then it's between the railroad at that point and whoever the users are. It's just like it was during the first 20 years of our existence. So I think you've given me more time than I probably deserve. Thank you very much.
No, that's fine, sir. I
did not have the opportunity to speak to you yet, so I appreciate the candor.
Good. I'm available. You can give me a call anytime. I'm happy to talk.
Okay.
Thank you.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think it's ludicrous to spend $150,000 to let people walk across the railroad track. I know, in our society we have to have laws, we have to have rules, but I think they should be commonsensical.
They need to make sense.
I don't know exactly what we can do at this point. I would personally be in favor of doing anything that we can legally do to get you guys across the railroad tracks, short of spending $150,000.
Right.
We're a poor county. I mean, we have about probably a $40 million unfunded repair project going on our roads and bridges in this county. So, I mean, it's not like, money's
right.
Available. But, I mean, I'm sure we could do something on a small scale. But I just can't imagine spending more than $2,000.
That's the point. I don't think you have to.
I think the railroads just try to keep us out of this.
If you
keep it traceable, in fact.
If you look at their estimate, there's two parts. There's two
I
parts to their estimate.
Position too.
The top part is $145,000. Includes like $86,000 for labor or something, and $36,000 for materials. I can't remember. But those are big numbers. But the bottom half of that is the real numbers. Mm-hmm. It's what it really takes to make that crossing comply with Indiana guidelines for a passive pathway crossing, which is the key here. I think you can do it for a lot less legally. But I'm happy to have that conversation with Mr. Mogo or the railroad company's attorneys or whomever. We just haven't gotten to that point.
But I think we just need to continue to pursue our options with the railroad and with our legal counsel. I'm wholeheartedly in favor of helping in any way possible. I didn't foresee this whole issue arising when we were presented with this scenario a couple of years ago, and I apologize for that. As I've said before, in retrospect, I would have looked into it much deeper than I did, but there were just some unintended consequences that popped up in this process.
And I think we can address it and correct it now without spending an arm and a leg and do it legally. But
I absolutely agree with you. I'm not one who would revert to the way they do it in Mexico. I was on vacation down, not really vacation, it was a mission trip. And my sponsor cohort on that side of the border, we were walking along the street in Gators Negras. And there's a sidewalk and there's a street, and then we approach up here, and there is about 8 foot by 8 foot by 8 foot deep hole that they had dug, partially in the sidewalk and partially in the street. There was no tape around it, there were no signs, there was nothing. You could have just walked right off into that hole. And I said, look at that hole there. How can that be, I said, in our country,
that wouldn't be permitted at all. And he said, well, down here, we just figured you're stupid enough to walk off in there. That's your problem.
And
I don't want that here.
Speaking of trains and railroad crossings, look up some video on the train market in Thailand. So I visited Thailand a couple years ago, and one of the places that we went was an actual market, and it is on a train track.
Really?
You literally walk on the train track, and then you'll hear a signal. And when the shop owners hear that signal, they pull back their awnings. There's like a line painted on the sidewalks. Everything has to be done behind that line. And literally, I was standing about that close to the train as it went by. And
that insurance would be hard to get.
I got some. Well, I think their opinion is the same. If you're stupid enough to stand in the, you know, in the way of the train. But I have some very interesting videos of my daughter and I during that experience. So it's certainly not that way in other countries.
Thanks for your patience.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Tim Clark, just a couple things. Danny, you weren't here at the last presentation, but on the petition thing from the railroad, if they were to appeal that, we had a representative here, I forget his name, from Bloomington, and he said based on the legislation, they would have backed local decisions against the railroad. So I would take that off.
Was that Chris May? No.
No.
He was here.
Matt Pierce.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So he's pretty clear on that. Said, hey, if you run into, if you had that kind of issue, we would have weighed in for you and backed the county in your decision. The other thing I got to laugh when they threw out federal regulations. First thing, and then threw in the dollars. First thing that popped into my mind is how many we were to apply religiously into the letter of the law, all the federal regulations concerning all the railroad crossings we have in this county. Where are the deviations and how much should the railroad be investing to bring those up to a federal standard, let alone how long that railroad, Indian Hill Railroad crossing, may have been out of federal spec regarding that one. We didn't do anything. We didn't say anything. We didn't demand that they, you know, brought that out. So as far as any kind of leverage, that may help a little bit. On the trail, Dana, we talked about the Black Trail in Nashville, 20,000. You mentioned a planning, and I won't go into the past conversations we had on planning, but the next part of that is we're looking at a 6 to 7 figure cost to implement that plan. And, you know, 6 figures minimum and maybe into the $1 million range. And so I don't know where the money is that is coming from, but I assume your first shot is to get the grants. So if we're talking about more than willing to put county money into a bike trail for Nashville is probably more tourists than his residents, but that's another issue. Then this is nothing. I mean, this is one of the top 50 trails in the nation, and you know, whatever we got to do, and we're a, you know, a recreational county. So I would think for trails in Brown County, that's a great investment to do whatever we got to do to open that up to walkers, for crying out loud. I don't know who's harmed by this stuff, and I can't see any kind of risk from any professional assessment at all. So that's all I had. I think it's a great deal, whatever we can do to open that thing and advertise it more in the county. I don't think a lot of people even knew we had such a thing and how that connected to the broader trail. And I think that's talking about a tourism and a tractor, that's it for low cost.
It's been a few years, but I've hiked the Knobstone section, and I've hiked the Tecumseh Trail section. What was the middle part? The Patriot?
Pioneer. Yeah.
I did start with a P. And that trail was still largely, you know, road walking and not complete through the, was it Jackson County?
Mainly. Yeah.
So I did not have the opportunity to hike that middle section, but, you know, I was much younger. I bounced better than I bounce now. I don't bounce very good now.
And hiking and trails is a lot more popular in the nation than mm-hmm. I think that's one of the state strategies. So, you know, it ought to be a priority for us, regardless of the cost. So thank you.
Well, I'll reach out to the railroad if you're
approval.
Yes, please. Anything you could do to...
See if I can breathe some common sense into, it might be easier to do that, but the lawyers do get out.
Absolutely. Anything you can do would be much appreciated.
And it may not, you know, they may shoot me down and say no, they have me for it.
I mean, I wouldn't have a problem spending $5,000 or $10,000 to get this thing open. Even that, I think, would be an extravagance, but you know, hey, I want to go back and try to make right what I probably should have done to begin with. You know,
$80,000 for the installation is ridiculous.
$150,000. Okay, well, I appreciate anything you can do and keep us up to date on that. And we'll continue to pursue this until we get it open.
Thank you.
Yes. And thank you, gentlemen, for coming today. Next on the agenda, and nearly last, I guess, Debbie Bartez has not appeared.
She's not. My concern is that she makes the meetings at 6 o'clock tonight.
That very well could be. Yes.
And
let's maybe put her on for next.
She was originally on for the 7, because she didn't think she'd have all of her numbers together.
Okay.
But she is, Debbie Bartez is the president of the board for the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and she has, I believe, assumed the leadership position temporarily while they hunt for a new executive director.
Okay.
So
I guess the last thing here is the...
vigil at the courthouse.
Yeah.
Jennifer Acton sent me an email, and the judge has approved.
Okay.
This is August the 31st at 6 p.m., and it's an observance of International Overdose Awareness Day. And our local coordinating council, along with some of our recovery groups, and the judge, and others, would like permission to hold that vigil at the courthouse. We may need to check with Laura or somebody and see if they need a podium or a microphone or something.
Okay.
I don't think we did it last year
that we have done.
We have done. This, I think, would be the second one that we have done.
Hi, Ann?
Yes.
This is Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, this is our second one. We did do it last year. That was our first event.
That was last year. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
It turned out well last year, and it's not anything major, but I think everyone, appreciated it, and we want to keep doing it.
So what kind of IT support are you wanting? You want a mic and things down there? What would you like?
Actually, if we can have a microphone, that'd be great.
Okay. I think we've got just a microphone, and I don't know if it's ours, actually.
Who provided that for the...
Parks and Rec has one.
Prayer.
Parks and Rec has one. I believe maybe Keith Baker. Check with Keith Baker, too, Jennifer, because I think he has a little... I think he's got a little microphone set up, too.
Yeah, that would be great. I'll check with him.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Last thing on the agenda is, do you have anything else, Mike?
No, I don't have anything else.
The only other thing was the resignation of the fire board. Roy Shea.
Yeah.
So Roy Shea was resigned from the Hamlin Township Fire District. He was one of the original appointments to that board, I believe, when we did it back in, I don't remember. I was on county council when it happened. I just don't know which time.
Yeah, 15, 20 years ago.
But they do have a replacement identified.
Oh, okay.
So I think...
Is that our appointment?
It's our appointment,
okay.
And I think...
Diane, is this for the Fire Protection District Board?
Yes.
Yeah, this is for the Hamlin Township Fire Protection District, yes.
I believe it's the City Council, correct, that's supposed to be making the appointment?
No, this is a township appointment. We actually appoint. It's either us or it's the council.
County Council?
Okay. Yeah, I believe it's the council.
I can't read.
The county council?
I think it is the council, because...
I sent the, I sent it to Melissa. I can forward it to you guys. It's Indiana Code 36A1112. If a vacancy appears on the board, the county legislative body shall appoint a trustee with the qualifications specified in subsection A.
So when we were in the process of creating those districts...
Thanks, Jake.
Back, I don't know, 20 years ago, county council approved Nauvoo, and they approved Helmsburg. When the Bean Blossom Sewer District came for approval, the council didn't want to take on that added responsibility. So we did something, and the commissioners sponsored the Bean Blossom, which is now the Grand Canyon Regional Sewer District. So that's how we do those appointments. But I believe, Julia, I believe that's correct, because the council's the one. Look at the appointment folder. Look in the appointment folder, because it tells who those board members are appointed by. So if you look there, Melissa, you'll see what we've done in the past. If that's the case, Julia can advertise it maybe once for them. In the interest of transparency for people in Hamlin Township, but they've identified David Redmond. I think I know who he is. Maybe not, because I think there's two David Redmonds actually. But he is a former firefighter from Marion County, I believe.
He lives on Hicks Road.
He lives on Hicks Road, yeah. He lives in Hamlin Township, so.
Okay, very good. Either of you have anything else for this meeting?
I'm looking.
Okay.
Make a motion to adjourn.
I've got some things. I'm just filtering for my red flags.
Anyone here have any questions? Anyone online have questions?
I think that's it. I don't see anything else.
Okay, we have a motion for adjournment.
I'll second that.
Second, all in favor, raise your right hand and say aye.
Aye.
Thank you all for coming today.
Aye.
See you next time.